I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Curzon Film Podcast. I'm Sam Howlett and this week we'll be discussing Kelly Reichardt's anthology drama Certain Women. This week I'm joined by Harry Chapman.
Hello.
Hello Harry, how are you doing?
I'm very well, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good, good.
So Certain Women is, an anthology piece. It tells three separate stories which are slightly linked about four different women. One of those women is played by Kristen Stewart, and Kristen Stewart has had a very interesting career in the past few years. So in the vein of Kristen Stewart's change from this kind of maybe mainstream popular teen icon actress?
She did Twilight, Sam.
She did Twilight.
She did Twilight.
And that's what she was essentially famous for.
Yeah.
And she was kind of unfairly lambasted
for that role.
And kind of seen as just sort of soppy teen in those kind of roles.
Yeah.
But recently she's done incredible things like Certain Women, like The Clouds of Sils Maria, and like Personal Shopper, which we'll be talking about in a few weeks' time. So she's become this kind of indie actress, I guess. And these aren't necessarily just films that are quote unquote good. These are films that are very small as well.
Yeah.
And aren't seen by the widest possible audience that you think an actress like Kristen Stewart would in general want to get.
Well, she's been able to sort of reinvent herself. I guess Twilight has given her that platform to reinvent herself because she is now a name that everyone knows.
Yeah.
And that happens with a lot of sort of younger actors and actresses.
Yeah.
That they're able to actually, they're giving themselves a platform. If you now look at what Daniel Radcliffe is doing, for instance.
Absolutely, yeah, that's another
example. He's doing a lot of horror and he's doing a lot of independent films.
Yeah.
Swiss Army Man was a really interesting, different project that we didn't necessarily see him doing.
Sure.
So I think it's quite a common thing and it's a really great thing to see because it means you get these sort of big, like, superstar actors in these sort of small independent films.
Yeah, and so even Robert Pattinson.
Yep.
He's had chosen fairly interesting roles, he chose to do Cosmopolis and The Rover and Bellamy instead of doing like a big budget superhero film or something similar to Twilight, like another young adult thing, which is risky for an actor.
Yeah.
But I think you're right that they've achieved fame already and they're now using that fame to explore more interesting different roles.
Yeah.
So this is going to be linked in with the pitch for the week. So, Harry, I'd like you to pitch to me an actor or actress who you think needs to kind of turn their career around in the same way that Kristen Stewart has done, and pitch for me the film in which they would do it.
So I was going to go for the answer I almost always go for initially.
Yes.
Vince Vaughn.
Vincey.
But I talk about him every
day.
Every day. And I feel like Hacksaw Ridge might have turned that around for him.
Yeah,
so he might have
True Detective season 2 tried to do that as well.
He was the best thing in it.
Pretty good in that. Yeah,
that is not a compliment to the rest
I
of
know.
The project. But I'm going to leave him alone. Apart from a sly dig at True Detective season 2, I'm going to leave him alone, and I'm going to concentrate on someone I actually really like, but I want to see what they can do.
Okay,
and that person is Chris Pratt. So really like Chris Pratt.
Yep,
love Parks and Rec. I think Guardians is great and a real surprise. I mean, I think everyone thought that was sort of going to fail and be sort of a bit of a...
Yeah.
Bit of a, like, you know, bit of a failure.
And I think he's the reason that it isn't.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So he's got this huge charisma, you know, but he's done big blockbusters. You know, Passengers was this big sci-fi blockbuster. Him, Jennifer Lawrence. There wasn't necessarily that much depth to
Jurassic World.
Jurassic World,
pretty
much
plays the same character.
Exactly. So he's playing the same character.
Magnificent Seven.
Yeah. Although I really enjoyed Magnificent Seven.
Yeah, so did I.
But he's again playing the sort of cocky, know-it-all sort of...
He's always
going to find a way to win in some way. It'll be quite funny on the way. So I want him to change how he's going to do that. And I think he needs... There's one thing that he can do that's going to change all that. And he can change his voice. And he can do an accent. And it's an accent we've seen him do. And you can look this up on YouTube. I think it was on the Graham Norton show. An Essex accent. Chris Pratt playing someone in Essex. You're sat back going, who could he play in Essex? What sort of rock star could he play in Essex? Not a rock star, ladies and gentlemen. A simple milkman. Oh, that sounds a bit dull, Harry. Does it? Does it sound dull? What's that? Is that a couple arguing as he goes past on his milk float? Oh, suddenly the wife disappears. He hasn't seen her for a while. Then suddenly he's collecting the empty milk bottles. And one of them's half full of milk. That's unusual. They normally finish all their milk in number 27. What's that in the milk? Is that a drop of blood? Blood in the milk. The Essex milkman story. He goes against the police to find out what happened to the wife. Maybe it's not necessarily the husband. Maybe there's a few suspects. I want the great and good of British acting and Chris Pratt as an Essex milkman / solving murders.
Cool. Okay.
And he does the accent throughout. There's a bit of a love interest with someone like Sally Hawkins.
Right. Yeah.
I think I've nailed this and I'm just going to go home.
Yeah. I mean, I can't think of anything to top that.
I can't think of anything wrong with it.
So it would be a reinvention of Chris Pratt's career.
Hugely.
A sort of smaller British murder mystery.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Interesting. I like it.
Yeah, and there's sort of a gritty realism to it. It's real sort of dirt under the fingernail stuff.
Well, blood in the milk.
Blood in the milk.
It's blood in the milk kind of stuff. Do you think that's going to become a new sort of popular metaphor?
Well, blood in the milk. Oh,
I mean, there's blood in the milk in this town. Also, when is it set? That there's still a milkman that everyone uses.
That's the thing. They still use the milkman, but they don't need to.
Right.
Because he's that popular. But he's sort of grisly. He's got a neck beard. He's got a David Tennant neck beard.
That's impressive neck beard, isn't it?
Oh, David Tennant's neck beard.
See, like most, I think a lot of men sort of shave just the neck beard.
Yeah, I get rid of my neck beard.
I don't think he can. There seems to be too much of it.
I reckon it grows like straight away.
It's like a three-man job, isn't it?
I reckon it's like Tim Allen in Santa Claus when he tries to shave and it grows back straight away. David Tennant's got that sort of thing. So yeah, Chris Pratt will have to learn how David Tennant grows his neck beard.
Well, maybe like David Tennant could be like neck beard wrangler on set or something.
Oh, it could be, yeah.
Consultant, just for brackets, neck beard.
Yeah, don't get him in to play anyone in this British Essex milkman murder mystery.
Right, so moving on. I thought about this quite a lot, and I thought that... So I thought of a few people. Someone that crossed my mind was Brendan Fraser.
Oh, yeah.
Remember Brendan Fraser?
I love The Mummy.
I know. I love The Mummy. The Mummy 2 is pretty entertaining. The Mummy 3 is really bad. And then you have things like George of the Jungle, which, again, is quite entertaining, but...
I like George of the Jungle. He's in a Looney Tunes film, isn't he?
He is Looney Tunes back in action, I believe he was in. He was in... But then he started to be in more and more bad kids' films.
I think they pay the bills, don't they, mate?
Exactly, that's what his career's gone to, paying bills, and now he's just nowhere, really. So I think he needs to come back.
Look at who's replacing him. Tom Cruise.
I know, yeah. It's sad, isn't it?
That is...
But I'm going to go for someone who hasn't quite completely faded away, but she is just not doing too well, I think, in her career and in the public, which is a shame because I think she's a good actress, and that's Katherine Heigl. Katherine Heigl became famous for being in Grey's Anatomy in the earlier seasons and in Knocked Up, both of which she's very good in.
Why didn't she do more Knocked Up stuff?
I know. Well, she could have been like the new Meg Ryan, this kind of like really great comedic actress.
Yeah.
But she said some things about her character in Knocked Up.
Yeah, she wasn't very. Well, it was reported as her being very nice.
Yeah. We don't know what's true.
There are two sides to
every story. It seems like she was not very gracious to her director and writer. And that kind of almost. And that'd be Judd Apatow, who's kind of the king of comedy.
Yeah.
Maybe not so much anymore, but definitely at the time was.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely had a big thumb over the comedy in Hollywood, and that kind of gave her a bad name. And then didn't she have some sort of. walk away from Grey's Anatomy sort of unceremoniously?
Yeah, there was quite a lot around that, and she sort of, it was basically she thought she was going to be the next sort of big thing, and thought like storyline should revolve around her more, and which you can't really do in a sort of piece where there's like 10 other actors who are all trying to get screen time and your name is not Grey, which is, you know, the point of the show.
But yeah, so the pitch I have for Katherine Heigl would be make it kind of meta.
Okay.
So she plays an actress who has said some things she hasn't said and was once popular but is now not popular.
Okay.
And she tries to write a film about herself trying to save her career.
Right.
So you have about 15 different levels going on.
I'm just going through the levels.
So
there is a 15.
She's writing a play. Yep. She's writing a film in which she's an actress in it, and then in that film, this actress is writing a film in which she's an actress in it, which in that.
Oh, goodness me.
So make it, not only make it a comeback, make it a commentary about the comeback.
Yeah.
Kind of, in a kind of, not exactly like this, but similar to Birdman.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
So Michael Keaton plays an actor who used to be in superhero films but hasn't really done much for a while and is trying to save his career.
So it's going
to
be a one-shot?
I mean, it can be a one-shot. That's for the director. I'm just the pitch. I'm just the producer. I'm just pitching this.
You're just the money man.
I'm just the money man. I've got the money. I've got the film. I've got the idea. I just need someone to do whatever they want with it.
I think you should be really good in something like that.
Yeah.
Would you have it flicking between the two? Would you have it flicking between the sort of the real life in terms of the first one, the first sort of version we see of her writing, and then would it flick to the actual...
I think it could flick to the actual film, yeah. Yeah. But I think it would make her come off...
be two characters.
She'd come off very, very intelligent and very self-aware, which I think she probably needs. I think it would, put her back in good graces with some people. I think if it gets good reviews, that'd be great. Even a nice sort of Oscar nomination would do her well.
I like Katherine Heigl. And I feel like the media has this sort of narrative around her.
Yeah.
And she's not been able to shake that.
No.
And I feel like everyone sort of absorbs that and suddenly has this thing where we're like, we don't really like Katherine Heigl. Yeah.
In the same way that Kristen Stewart had, but managed to turn around with her career choices.
Good point.
So I think I have to award that to The Blood and the Milk, not just because it's an amazing film, but because the title is now going to be something that I think we'll be saying a lot in public. Like
this podcast is not going to be a Blood and the Milk production.
So let's go over to the main show now. So Kelly Reichardt has made a name for herself as one of the most interesting independent female directors working in America at the moment. She's famous for films such as Old Joy, Wendy and Lucy, Meek's Cut Off. All those three are kind of very sort of slow, under-dramatic pieces of work, usually sort of set in the South of America. And then she made Night Moves in 2013, which stars Jesse Eisenberg, Dakota Fanning and Peter Sarsgaard.
Good cast.
And that's more of a genre film, more of a thriller. And I think what a lot of people think of with these directors is that they work their way up eventually to make something really big and really huge and really momentous. And I think a lot of people may have thought, including me, that Night Moves is kind of a stepping stone for Kelly Reichardt to now move to do something really huge. And then she followed that up with Certain Women, which we're talking about today, which is, I think, incredibly sort of modest and small.
Yeah.
So let's just talk about the sort of loose plot of the film. So we have three different stories. One stars Laura Dern as a lawyer called Laura.
Yeah, it's easy to remember. Laura is Laura.
The second one stars Michelle Williams as...
a character called Gina, who is married to James Lagos, is Ryan.
Okay, and they're looking to build a house together. Yep. And then the third story stars relative unknown actress Lily Gladstone.
Yeah, who plays a character called Jamie, and she absolutely steals the film.
She does,
but we'll talk about that a bit more later. And her relationship with a lawyer... who's having to do like insane amount of work to get by, who's played by Kristen Stewart, and her name is Beth.
Excellent. So, first of all, I want to talk about the fact that it's an anthology film.
Yeah.
Because with the when I hear a film is an anthology film, I get slightly apprehensive about it. I just think often with these things, and this is the this is what I had with certain films which are sort of chapterized and episodic, that you always end up preferring one to the others, and it doesn't feel like a fully complete film.
Do you think it's right that you can compare each section, or do you think you should take it as a whole?
I'm not sure. That's another thing. Yeah. Is that, am I supposed to be watching this like you're right, like three separate films, or is it supposed to be one film which sort of loops in and out of each other? I mean,
because... So I would say that you have to take it as a whole piece.
Absolutely, yeah. The reason it's not a TV show.
Yeah, exactly. So it's put into one thing. It's
one work.
It's one piece of work. It's, you know, however long the film is, 120 minutes or whatever it is, one thing. And therefore, I think with this, that it's an anthology film to get the spirit of where you are and to understand women's role within sort of this society, and how these women are sort of trying to turn the tide on that, and I think the whole feel of this film is they're in a certain place in sort of mid America, and there's this certain, like, there's not a lot of wealth within this place, but equally it's not a looking at sort of poverty and not having things, because actually pretty much everyone in the film is well off enough that they can survive. Like, I know Kristen Stewart's character's having to do a lot of work to get by, but that's also a sort of ambitious thing as well. So, and I feel like the whole film is arcing to show you what it's like to be a woman at this time in this place, and how you get by and how you get what you want, and it's all about driving these women's narratives to get to their goals, and for each character, I'll just quickly go through what their sort of goals are, or what to me they seem to be their goal. So Laura Wells, the lawyer played by Laura Dern, is really trying to show herself to be a successful lawyer and show how good she can be in a very much a man's world. And that's shown straight away, and this isn't a spoiler, shows straight away when she takes a client to another male lawyer. The male lawyer says, oh yeah, you can't take this case forward anymore. And he just, and the client, played by Jared Harris, who's fantastic in this, just accepts it.
Yeah.
And you just see her face being like, I've been working on this for months.
I know,
telling the customer. Yeah. And you just feel this, like, of course he just accepts what the man says, and that's terrible. But she persists with this client, and she keeps going with it, and she keeps fighting the good fight and trying to do the right thing and trying to stand up in a world that's trying to get against her. And it's not a big dramatic thing.
No.
It's a really small fight, and it's her own fight, and that's why it's so important, and that's why it's being shown. In terms of with Michelle Williams' character's Gina, she's sort of got two things going on. So she's trying to build a dream house, and as I said, it's not a huge budget thing. It's not like she's a millionaire trying to build a house. It's like she's trying to build a house, but also build out sort of natural materials that are locally sourced. And really, her sort of drive is to build this house, but also. She's sort of fighting for a marriage sort of in the background a little bit, and just trying to get her husband to fight for her a bit more.
Yeah.
And that's not in a way that's like taking away from her agency. It's in a way that they're a real couple and she just wants their marriage to still be a thing. Got a young daughter and wants to build this house to build a better.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
To life for them.
Yeah.
And in terms of with Kristen Stewart's character, her sort of drive is to be this lawyer and to survive and have enough money and be able to do the things she's learnt to do, and therefore she's doing a job that she doesn't actually know. So she's driving 4 hours, is it?
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah, she's driving 4 hours to get to this job to teach this certain sort of education law that she doesn't really understand, and so. They are each character, each female character is holding on to this one thing that they want to achieve, and it's pushing that. And that's why this is an anthology movie, because they each are linked by they're loosely linked in other ways.
Yeah, which vague plot.
Yeah, there's some that show they're sort of in the same area and in the same place and in the same time. But actually, it shows they're in the same time by what they're driving to get to, and that is the sort of. What pushes the movie along throughout.
Absolutely. I think this is really a celebration of modest ambitions, like real ambitions.
Yeah.
The ambitions that you and I would have, or anyone in the world, would want to be good at their career, would want to get respect in their relationship.
Yeah.
You know, this and that. And I think that's the real achievement of this film.
Yeah.
Is to show how ambition doesn't have to be winning the World Cup or making $1 million or doing anything huge, anything momentous. Ambition can be as simple as what these women do in this film.
Yeah.
And I think Reichardt's really, really got that down to a T. Right, so should we sort of go further into each storyline then?
Yeah.
Okay, so the first one, which is with Laura Dern. Amazing. I mean, Laura Dern has been in Hollywood for years.
Yeah.
And it's amazing that she's doing these really interesting roles now, and
yeah, it's fascinating. For
a slightly older actress as well now. I mean, trajectory career sort of from Blue Velvet, Jurassic Park, more sort of interesting David Lynch stuff as well in the middle, and then here she is just really doing a really amazing job.
Yeah, well, I think the last thing people probably saw her in is The Wild, if you remember.
Yes,
that.
Yes, she was her mum, wasn't she?
Yeah,
in
she was Oscar nominated for that.
Yeah, I think she might have been.
So, so that's probably the last thing people sort of really remember her for. And it's really good to see her have this be a rounded character. Like, she is,
considering she's only in it for ultimately 25 minutes.
Yeah,
I suppose,
she's not in it for
like
very
that.
Long,
yeah.
But she's definitely she's got a career. She's also like a sexual being as well,
yes.
Which I think is really important.
Really,
especially
important.
For sort of as we said, slightly older actresses.
Yeah.
And we don't mean that in a patronizing way.
Not
we mean
all.
That in a Hollywood typically doesn't give
yes.
sort of, doesn't give sexual
desire
to older
actresses. Women over over 30.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly. So that's really great to see.
Yeah, and her. I think this story is the most sort of plot orientated, maybe ultimately, which comes as a surprise. There's a, I don't think we'll say exactly what it is, but there is something that happens with, in particular with Jared Harris's character, which I didn't see coming at all.
No,
and it's at first I thought this feels like something from a different film. It feels too genre-y, too thrillery.
Yeah.
But Reichardt's got such a delicate hand at directing that it just feels very natural. And the way that Laura Dern reacts to it is so matter-of-fact, and the way everyone reacts to it, I think.
Well, I think it's almost doing the opposite of what the rest of the film does.
Yeah.
And it's taking an extraordinary event and making it fairly ordinary.
Yes.
And we don't want to spoil what happens, because I feel like you need to watch it and sort of soak that scene in. Because it's a real, like, initially it's a real, like, sort of messes with your mind a bit. But yeah, it's taking something that is a huge event and making it quite a small event.
Definitely, yeah. And so we have the connection here then between this story and then the second story. We find out that Laura Dern is sleeping with a man, played by James LaGross, who then we eventually realise is married to Michelle Williams' character, which is quite, again, a really sort of offhand revelation. It's not, I mean, it changes the way you think about that second story.
Yes, yeah, definitely. and that's what fits within this sort of having it as one film.
Yeah.
Because it just slightly shapes what you think.
Yeah.
And I think it does also affect, you kind of think, oh, Michelle Williams is going to be this sort of sympathy character, and it's going to be all about their relationship and her and it, maybe the affair is going to come out and that's going to be the story. And then it's a story about, instead it's a story about a married couple that are trying to build their own home.
Yeah, absolutely. And we mentioned earlier there's this kind of, when Laura Dern's character takes Jared Harris to see the male lawyer, she has this kind of sort of wry amusement in her face at the fact that he's now listening to a man. Yeah. I think there's some of that in the second story as well, that the elderly man who they're buying the stones from to build the house, he kind of generally only talks to the husband, and I think there's some slight frustration in Gina that he won't really talk to her as much and listen to her, and then she's got her own frustrations as well, that her husband that we know is having an affair is not really listening to her either, and she's having problems with the teenage daughter.
Yeah, it's real life problems.
It's
wanting something for your house and knowing there's one person that will give it to you.
Yeah.
But that only that person will only talk to your husband.
Yeah.
Like, that must be a constant frustration.
Definitely. And Michelle Williams is a sort of favourite of Reichardt's. She's been in a few of her films before. And Michelle Williams, again, is just... When we talk about sort of actors turning their career around earlier, I think that Michelle Williams came from Dawson's Creek and I think straight away made really good choices with her roles.
I've now just got the Dawson's Creek soundtrack in my head. I'm not going to sing it.
Oh, okay.
I'm not going to sing it. I was about to. I nearly sung it. I'm not going to.
Well, you don't want to wait for your life to be over.
Oh.
No. Yeah, I think she straight away went into these really smart roles. And I think she's now sort of synonymous with great filmmaking, Michelle Williams, and great performances. And
well, I think she was, you know, Manchester by the Sea she's hardly in that film.
And yet
she steals every scene she's in.
Totally. Oscar nominated as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And it's sort of, you know, we go slightly back to the pitch idea, but it's something that someone like Katherine Heigl sort of needs to do now.
Yeah.
Michelle Williams should be sort of what people look to do in terms of turning your career from this sort of, if you want to, turning it from a sort of a popular culture into sort of more independent, sort of, I guess, more arty indie films.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, and that one for the third story, which I think might be my favourite.
Not that we're going to separate it.
I know you said we didn't want to split it up, but I got the most out of this one,
yeah,
I think.
That's okay. And I think that's a really important thing. I think that's what having a film in three sections gives you the ability to do. You're able to focus in on one section and sort of, at points, you are able to focus in on one section and say, actually, I got the most out of this. Why did I get the most out of it?
Yeah.
And I think that's the really sort of interesting thing, because I'm sure, you know, if you're a married couple, you might potentially watch this film and get more out of the Michelle Williams character. Or if you're a woman or if you're a man or a woman, but if you're a woman in a high-powered job and you're trying to and you're trying to get, you know, get somewhere, or you have ambitions that are being stopped because of your gender or race or anything like that, you might get more out of the sort of Laura Dern story. So I think that that's what an anthology movie or a movie in sort of part it gives you the ability to do. You're able to sort of focus in on what you get out of each section the most, and that that ultimately I think leads to why you might have favorite sections.
Definitely, yeah. So in this section, I think we have, for me, the revelation of the film, which is Lily Gladstone as a very lonely sort of ranch hand. And she starts to go to sort of these adult classes just for company, really.
Well, even there, she sits right at the back of the class and doesn't talk to anyone there at all.
Yeah, and I think she takes a liking to Kristen Stewart, and they become... not quite friends, but they sort of start hanging out, and because she knows that she's got a 4-hour drive back every night, so they go for burgers they often get.
Yeah, they just sort of go to a diner and get some food. She doesn't actually often eat. It's Chris and Stuart often eating, and they're just chatting.
You say they're chatting, but it's very much, it seems more like a one-sided chat. I think that Lily Gladstone felt like she barely had any lines. And maybe she didn't, I don't know. It just felt like she was often really quite quiet and more pensive.
Yeah, that's true. I think it's a real sort of acting masterclass in the understated. Sure. She said she does have some lines, obviously, but in terms of it's what she doesn't say, and it's that isolated character that suddenly one-on-one in conversation with someone that she's able to really show all her vulnerabilities and everywhere, and that isolation is just all over her.
Yes.
You just see this sort of person that clearly doesn't have contact with people very often. And we see these scenes where it just feels cold when you watch them, these scenes where she's doing sort of manual labour and is having to clear up things. And it's really nice to see that sort of role be given to a young actress.
Yeah.
Because we often you'd expect it to be sort of the lonely man in the farm, and something's gone wrong, and there's been a big dramatic event, and that, and it's great to see this character and to see Lily Gladstone, who's fantastic in it.
Yeah, and so she, like, on the one hand, she does portray this kind of sort of lifelong solitariness to her and this real yearning.
Yeah.
I think that, they could have gone down the route of this being almost a stalker, because that is a slight.
Well, they never. The nice thing is, there's never a true definition of what their relationship is, or what either one of them think their relationship is. Particularly from Lily Gladstone's character, where she drives. So Kristen Stewart stops working at the school where she's taking these night classes, and Lily Gladstone drives and goes to find her. And you could have that, as you said, you could have that as a stalker narrative and have that as a sort of hunting down someone you've only met two or three times. But instead, it's this really sort of soft trying to find you've made a connection with someone and trying to keep that connection. And how do you keep that when the person you've made the connection with has abandoned you?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it really doesn't. It's not afraid to not give you what you want as an audience. And there's, you just sit there wanting it to be this sort of happy ending, and you just know it's never going to be.
Yeah, and the connection between the second and third story is, I think it's Laura Dern's character, isn't it?
She goes in basically. The character of Jamie goes into a law office to find out where Kristen Stewart works.
Yeah.
And then you just see Laura Dern sort of go past and up the stairs. So it's a really sort of loose link, that one.
Yeah.
But as I said, it's to do with the landscape of it rather than the actual connections between the individual characters.
Absolutely. And speaking of the landscape, this is filmed really beautifully in Montana. And you have this, it's sort of, there's a lot of space on the screen, like in the second story when they're kind of camping outside in the open, and when Jamie's working on her horse ranch, there's a lot of space, but then every now and then you kind of see the Rocky Mountains in the background. I think it's the Rocky Mountains.
I think
Some sort of mountain range in the background, which kind of gives you the sense that although there's a lot of space with these characters, they are kind of blocked in. They are kind of
yeah.
fenced into this life they have for themselves.
Yeah, they're not.
But they're making use of the space within it.
Yeah.
In use of the making use of what they have, which I think is a really nice. There's a nice duality there between yeah. the setting and the performances and the characters.
Yeah, and the lighting is beautiful throughout yeah. the film, particularly the night scenes in particular. Yeah. I love in the first story, the sort of between the character of Laura and Fuller, Jaron Harris's character, there's lovely shooting in the darkness. And when Jamie's driving, I think that's shot beautifully in the night. There's just sort of a slight light on her from street lights, and I'm always really impressed how they get that lighting so correct when clearly you have to show yeah. enough of the person on screen, but also make it look like they're actually driving and not just yeah. driving in darkness. So
definitely,
it's beautiful.
So quickly before we wrap up, I was going to ask you, do you think this is a feminist film?
I think it is, because yeah, feminism is as far as I understand it, and I understand I'm a man talking yeah. about feminism, but is about equality, and it's about
yeah.
men, women, or however you define yeah. yourself, being equal and everyone being equal. And this film does this because the women in the film are driving to get to certain places and are driving to achieve things. And equally, this film could have been, could have been three men doing it, and that's why it's a feminist film, because it's been chosen that there are women driving to do what they want to do and are achieving what they want to yeah. do, and this is crucial, achieving what they want to do and are in control of that. And so, by having the control, having the agency, and being able to achieve what they want to do, I think it has to be a sort of feminist film.
Yeah, I agree. I think that these women, they don't hate men. They it's just that men simply are one part of their lives. Their very rich lives, and I think especially in the first two stories, both those Laura Dern and Michelle Williams, they kind of have this sort of slight detachment, which isn't quite. It's not. They're not cold, but I think it's sort of, like you say, sort of self-awareness, self-possession.
Yeah.
They absolutely have complete agency. I think there's kind of a misconception that if a film has a female director, it's instantly feminist, which I don't think is the case.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that.
But I think definitely this film, I think we can consider it a feminist piece
yeah,
of work.
Yeah, I definitely would. I definitely would.
And just sort of quickly wanted to say how we're now finished with Oscar season. The Oscars are now over. And it's really nice to have this come after that, because
yeah.
those films, as amazing as they were very, very ambitious, very big, with these big performances, really dramatic. And
yeah.
It's nice to have something that's really relaxed, really, really quite sort of mellow.
Yeah, you can ease into it. It's not,
yeah.
It's not something going to chuck a big sort of revelation at you.
No.
And that's why we can openly talk about yeah, sort of Laura Dern's character having an affair. Because that's not a spoiler. That is just a fact that happens in
it's
the film.
It's part of her character.
It's part
yeah.
of the character, and it's part of the narrative. And that's sort of nice that you can watch this and sort of... It almost... Yeah, we talked about it with Moonlight.
Yeah.
And it sort of does a slightly similar thing to it. But it sort of washes over you. And you
completely.
Sort of, yeah, and you sort of... You just sort of breathe it in rather than it sort of attacks you on
yeah.
screen and you're trying to catch up with it. It just has this beautiful slow pace throughout the whole thing.
The film's like a warm bath.
It is into it. It is like a warm bath.
Yeah. I mean, it's over, you just get out. And it's still there to think about.
Okay.
it's definitely not like Blood in the Milk, the film.
Nothing's like Blood in the Milk.
Okay, so do check out Certain Women. It's released as of today. And we want to thank CSR once again for letting us use their studio. And I mentioned earlier some of Kelly Reichardt's earlier films, and they are all on Curzon Home Cinema at the moment. So that's Old Joy, Wendy and Lucy, Meek's Cut Off, and Night Moves. Do check those out. I mean, Wendy and Lucy in particular, I think, is a really great film. And it won the Palme d'Or at Cannes,
oh, nice.
Which is the award for the best dog.
I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah.
Did the artist win that?
That did, yeah. Did, yeah.
Oh, okay.
And Patterson also won it.
Oh, definitely.
The Palme d'Or, yeah.
Anyway, I'd like to recommend Bend It Like Beckham. It's still really charming after all this time. And Gurinder Chadha is a fantastic director. And also out today is Viceroy's House, which is her new film about sort of the last Viceroy of India. So do check that out.
Excellent. So that is goodbye from Harry Chapman.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. Thank you very much for listening and downloading, and we will see you next week.
Blood in the milk.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.